I want to reflect on the discussions we're having in the adult Sunday school class regarding Marcus Borg's remarkable book, Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time. In that book, he says the way we think about Jesus falls into three categories, that modern Christians have three basic visions of Jesus, and the way a person envisions Jesus has a direct impact on the way that person practices the Christian faith. The three visions of Jesus are as the one and only Holy Son of God, as a great teacher, and as a spirit person, someone radically in touch with the Spirit of God. This morning, as we examine each of these three, I think you'll discover that you will be able to almost instantly place all of your Christian friends into one of those three categories. I admit that I keep a foot in each of those three categories, a good trick for a guy with only 2 feet. But rather than searching for a better metaphor on which to stand, I'll turn immediately to today's lectionary text, which was the catalyst for this sermon in the first place. Today's Bible text is from the Gospel of John, and it seems a little out of place when you consider how the lectionary arranges the Bible texts over the year. The season of Easter, according to the church year, lasts 7 weeks, and this is week 5 of Easter. The Bible texts for Easter begin with the resurrection stories, and then they're concentrated around the book of Acts. That's a natural progression since the book of Acts deals with what the apostles did after Jesus was killed. But today's text goes back in time, back to the Last Supper, which took place the night before his death. The reason the lectionary places this text in the middle of the Easter season is obvious. It is the final instructions of Jesus to his disciples. It's the foundation of the Christian community that would develop following his death. These words are called the New Commandment, and they're found in John 13. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. But I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should love one another. And by this, everyone will know you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. With that text as our foundation, let's look at the three ways to envision Jesus and the resulting faith practices that arise from those three visions. First, there's the vision of Jesus as the one and only Holy Son of God. This vision is usually anchored on the idea of the Trinity. The idea is that Jesus was so special, so absolutely unique, that he was not only a human being beyond compare, he was actually, in a very real sense, God. This vision of Jesus actually results in two very different ways of practicing the Christian faith. First, there's the vision that most of the people who are drawn to university congregational church reject, namely the idea that only those who say and believe specific things about Jesus can earn favor with God. And those who fail the litmus test established by their particular congregation or their particular denomination are forever beyond the reach of God's redeeming love. Those who respond this way to this vision of Jesus as the Holy Son of God are often driven by a single idea: save people. Do whatever is necessary to make everybody understand there is one and only one way to be okay with God, and that's by saying and believing what one must say and believe about Jesus. And I don't mean to make light of this approach, but it tends to turn life into a game. It's the save your soul game. And that's the whole point of life itself. Get to heaven. It's what it's all about. And the only way to get to heaven is to say and believe what you're supposed to say and believe. It's all up to you. Basically, God could not save your soul if he wanted to unless you say and believe the right things about Jesus. My daughter Corinne has had to endure the better part of this school year with one of her friends trying desperately to save her soul. One day, this girl's mother got in on the act, hoping to put Corinne on the right path. True story. And her mother said to my daughter, "I got saved when I was 18. I don't know if it's all true, but I got saved just in case." It's a game. And that's one way to build a faith based on the notion that Jesus is a part of the Trinity, an absolutely unique expression of God in this world. But while many people, myself included, find that response to Jesus narrow-minded and insulting to loving and sincere people of other faiths, there is another way to respond to the vision of Jesus as a part of the Trinity, Jesus as the unique Holy Son of God, and that is the mystical response. Gregory of Nyssa was a bishop, mystic, theologian, and saint who lived in the 4th century. He's one of the what we now call the Desert Fathers. I believe his often overlooked insight into the Trinity is extremely important. People tend to approach the idea of the Trinity in one of two ways. They either dismiss it out of hand without giving it any real thought, or they insist on hammering the Trinity into some sort of hardened theological fact. Gregory of Nyssa said what mystics from every religious tradition have been saying since they started trying to express with words what it means to experience God. He said that God was undefinable. The moment we say anything about God, we've taken a step away from God. The God that can be expressed is not God. So for Gregory of Nyssa to define God as triune, to say that we now understand God because we understand the Trinity, is a terrible sin. The Trinity, according to Gregory, is a gift from God to the human mind. The Trinity is a way for human beings to have some understanding of God. It's a way for human beings to think about that which cannot be humanly conceived. God is the creator of all that is. God is the sustainer of all that is. God is the redeemer of all that is. Creator, redeemer, sustainer. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. If we start thinking that we have a formula for the actual nature of God, and certainly if we start insisting that everybody in the world better accept our formula or they are in big trouble with God, then we've taken a beautiful gift and turned it into something it was never meant to be. The idea of Jesus as the Holy Son of God is a powerful idea. If we view it as a hardened fact that must be accepted by everybody, lest they find themselves suffering eternally at the hands of an angry God, we've taken something that is meant to be beautiful and turned it into something incredibly ugly. But if we view it as profoundly true, not because it keeps us out of trouble with an angry God, but because it is an idea that can draw us directly into the presence of God, then it is one of the most powerful truths and beautiful gifts God has given to humankind. So our first vision of Jesus, Jesus as the Holy Son of God, can be used in positive or negative ways. And that's also the case for the second way of envisioning Jesus, Jesus as a great teacher. It's undeniable that Jesus was a great teacher. Consider the Bible passage we examined this morning with Jesus commanding the disciples to love one another as he himself had loved them. And consider the parables. I've got to do a sermon series on the parables. They contain the core of Jesus' teachings, and they are so deep, so complex. John Calvin made the great observation that the Bible is like a pair of glasses. It is the lens through which we see God. And Calvin said that lens acts in a different way for each and every person who opens the Bible. A 6-year-old child can read a Bible story and be drawn into the presence of God, and a theologian who has spent his life studying the Bible can read the same story and be drawn into the presence of God in an entirely different way. Nowhere is this more true than with the parables of Jesus. They speak to us. They challenge us. They even sometimes confuse us, and we can delve as deeply as we wish into the messages they contain. I preface my remarks about the idea of Jesus as a great teacher with this reflection on the depth of the parables, because I think many people who envision Jesus as a great teacher oversimplify the faith. All of Christianity, in their eyes, boils down to two simple words: be good. And while that's certainly a part of the message, it's not the whole message, not even for those whose vision of Jesus and vision of the Christian faith is built upon the idea of Jesus as a great teacher. For those who think they can boil the whole Christian faith and the whole message of Jesus down to the words, be good, I would advise they read the Sermon on the Mount. God's real blessing is on the poor, on those who mourn, the meek, the merciful. Rejoice when people persecute you. It's not enough not to murder, because you are liable to the judgment of God if you even become angry with another person. You've committed adultery in your heart if you so much as look lustfully at another person. If you're struck on the right cheek, turn also the other. If someone asks for your coat, give him your coat. No questions asked. Give him your shirt too. Love your enemies. Do not store up treasures on earth. Never worry about what you will eat or drink tomorrow. Give away everything you have. There's a lot more to the teachings of Jesus than trying to be a nice person. And I must confess, I have to bite my tongue when somebody says to me, I'm a Christian, but I don't believe in all that theology stuff. For me, being a Christian is about following the teachings of Jesus. And I want to say, wow, can I shake your hand? I knew there were people in this world who followed the teachings of Jesus, but I've never met one. This is a real honor. And that's the truth. As nearly as I can tell, there are people in this world who follow the teachings of Jesus, men and women who are driven by their faith to labor in impoverished obscurity on behalf of God's forgotten children. I know they're out there, but I'm not one. And I personally don't know a single person who goes to bed at night with no idea where he's going to find a meal the following day. I don't know one single person who refuses to save $1 for his or her own future, knowing there's a hungry person somewhere who needs that dollar now. And that is what it would mean to strictly follow the teachings of Jesus. But that's not to say we should give up. And it's not to say that following the teachings of Jesus is such an impossibility we should just abandon the faith and give in to our selfish impulses. I do believe we should be informed and guided by his teachings. But I would certainly caution against saying that following the teachings of Jesus is the basis of our faith, because if that's the case, we've set ourselves up for certain failure. I mentioned that I have one foot firmly planted in each of the visions of Jesus we've examined so far: Jesus as the Holy Son of God and Jesus as a great teacher. But if there's one place where I am most firmly anchored, it's on the third vision of Jesus: Jesus as a spirit person. Before I talk about what it might mean for Jesus to be a spirit person, I want to explain why this is such a natural fit for my ministry. Anytime a person feels called to the ministry, they must have some sort of purpose. I mean, hopefully, men and women who feel called to the ministry don't pursue this vocation because they like the outfits. They have to feel there's a reason for standing in the pulpit. For those ministers who envision Jesus primarily as the one and only Holy Son of God, their purpose is usually to save souls. And that is a noble calling, but it's not mine. I do not feel compelled to try to save anybody's soul. I leave that to God. for ministers who are driven by the vision of Jesus as a great teacher. Their call usually involves using the gospel to try to make people better human beings. They are usually driven by the social gospel. Get out there in the world and do good works. And if there's a more noble reason to enter the ministry, I cannot imagine what it is. But it's not the primary focus of my ministry. For ministers who envision Jesus primarily as a spirit person, the call to ministry involves trying to point people toward a closer relationship with God. And that is the reason I stand here week after week. I embrace the idea of Jesus as the Holy Son of God because I believe those who approach Jesus as a part of the Trinity, not with legalistic threats or hardened confessions of faith, but rather open to the mystery of God through the love of Christ, can be drawn into a relationship with God through that vision of Jesus. And I embrace the idea of Jesus as a great teacher because I believe there's a synergistic effect to seeking a relationship with God and doing good works. For example, when you're drawn closer to God through prayer, you find yourself seeking ways to help the poor. When you help the poor, you find yourself drawn closer to God. It's a process of spiritual growth that draws on itself, and it's strengthened with every devotion and with every act of love. But I believe a relationship with God is the most important aspect of human life. And so I am quite naturally drawn to the image of Jesus as a spirit person. What that means is that Jesus himself was in a unique spiritual relationship with God. For Jesus, God was not the object of philosophical speculation. God was not a theological principle. God was not Aristotle's prime mover unmoved. God was not Paul Tillich's ground of being. God was not reality itself. For Jesus, God was all of those things and much, much more, because for Jesus, God was an experiential reality. God was as solidly real for Jesus as the ground on which we stand. Many people have moments in their lives when they experience the presence of God. It can be when they are in the darkest of life's shadows, when a loved one has died, or personal mistakes and wrongdoing have led to a state of self-hatred. Sometimes it happens while watching a sunrise or a sunset, as everything seems to be exactly as it must be. And for just an instant, you have the sense that from the beginning of time, you were meant to be exactly where you are, right here, right now, seeing all you see, hearing all you hear, feeling all you feel, and then the moment is gone. For Jesus, as a spirit person, life was like that all the time. Those moments of great assurance and peace we sometimes feel were the norm for Jesus. He was completely open to the presence and truth of God, and he completely yielded every selfish impulse to the eternal love of God. That is the vision of Jesus I find most honest and most compelling. From this vision, I have no problem moving to those other visions, Jesus as the Holy Son of God and Jesus as a great teacher. But starting with Jesus as a spirit person has some advantages, I think, as we seek our own personal relationship with God. When we begin with the idea of Jesus as a great teacher, it seems to me it's difficult to become spiritually inspired. I mean, there have been lots of great teachers. Plato is one of my favorites, and Plato can take me to intellectual heights that few others can, but there's not a word in Plato that drives me to my knees in joyous wonder at the glory of God. When we begin with Jesus as the Holy Son of God, we can certainly be driven to our knees in wonder, but it can be hard relating that to our individual lives. We think, well, sure, Jesus could act that way and pray that way and do all those wonderful things, but that's because he was completely different from you and me. He was born of a virgin. He could perform miracles anytime he wanted to. And ultimately, he knew he was going to ascend through the sky and sit at the right hand of God. It's not that easy for you and me. We got to scratch out a living here. We got mortgages, car payments, insurance premiums, kids to put through college. Jesus was the Holy Son of God. I'm just a guy. But when we begin with Jesus as a spirit person, we see that the difference between Jesus and ourselves isn't one of our intrinsic nature. Jesus was a human being related to God in the same way you and I are. The difference is that Jesus unconditionally opened himself to all the possibilities of such a relationship. And that's what made him a great teacher. And even more importantly, that is why it's a certain truth for us to say, Jesus was the Holy Son of God. All three visions of Jesus we've examined this morning are appropriate ways to think of him. And there are dedicated and loving Christians who anchor their faith on each of those three images. And those Christians are really easy enough to spot. All you need to do is measure their faith against the litmus test Jesus provided to his disciples at the Last Supper, the new commandment with which we began our discussion. Just as I have loved you, you should love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples.